What's up, you guys? Movie retrospective time once again, talking about Brian De Palma some more. We've been doing a lot of Brian De Palma movies recently.
They're good.
Well, yeah.
They're good. Yeah. I've seen this one as a kid. I forgot all about it.
Yeah, I feel like this was on cable a lot, because I saw this probably, like, younger than I should have seen it, because it's...
They just played it.
It's pretty smutty.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was on HBO Cinemax, something like that, like, all the time in the early 1980s, yeah. I feel like, and I probably saw it then. Although, I didn't really remember a lot of stuff about it. Like, I remember the poster, and I remembered, like, some of the stuff, and I remembered, like, the big twist and everything, but a lot of it I had forgotten, so it was, like, really nice to revisit it, and it's actually, like, much better than I remembered.
Yeah, well made.
It is, yeah.
You had somebody, you know, laughing at me because I said Michael Caine was scary. And like, Michael Caine is scary? Watch this bitch. Yeah, he's in it. Michael Caine, it's young Michael Caine. He's looking handsome and shit. Scary as shit. Scary. He was scary in The Hand. If you haven't seen those movies, you need to see him. He was kind of scary in The Island, even though he was the good guy. There was just something intense about him. He always scared me as a kid.
When we were watching this movie last night, you said to me that he's like, you know who Michael Caine looks like in this movie, particularly Ted Bundy.
Yes, he looks just like him.
He looked quite a bit like Ted Bundy, yeah. And I don't know if it was just the hair, or because he had kind of the same hair as Ted Bundy had around the same time period.
His facial expressions were looking like Ted
Bundy.
But
yeah, so he did look, you know, he did look a little bit like Ted Bundy.
He does a great job in this.
Yeah, he's really good in this. I mean, everybody is good in this. Yeah. I feel like this movie, so this came out in 1980.
Yeah, it stars that girl from, the cop girl from RoboCop. She's in it. She's
Nancy
cute.
Nancy Allen.
Yeah, she's wearing damn stockings and hoses and garters.
Well, it's funny because she was in Carrie as well. And actually, she was married to Brian De Palma for a while, like, and for sure when this movie was made.
Smoking
so. Yeah, so she was in Blowout and stuff as well. But yeah, that's the thing. I was watching another review earlier, and like the guy was saying, he's like, you know, it's like I had only ever seen Nancy Allen in RoboCop, so I didn't really get everybody talking about like how sexy she was and everything.
Yeah.
Watch this movie, and then you'll understand.
She's like Bo Derek, hotter than Bo Derek back in those days, if you ask me.
And like I said, you get to see her in like really scanty clothing.
Yeah, I remember,
so, you know.
People were crazy about Bo Derek. I didn't really see much in her. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, I really like Nancy Allen in this, honestly.
Yeah, she's a lot better.
The thing about Dress to Kill, I kind of feel like, well, you know, and I think we brought this up before, but I think Brian De Palma, either you love him or you hate him, because he does have a very distinctive style. And I feel like some people that don't care for him are just like, oh, well, he's just ripping off Hitchcock, which... I guess is fair, but, I mean, he doesn't really make a secret of it, though. I mean, he's really, really into Hitchcock, and, I mean, Dress to Kill is essentially his take on Psycho, like, and there's stuff in there that is absolutely inspired by Psycho, and like I said, he's not trying to be slick about it or anything like that. And he's basically
like
saying, I really like Psycho, and I'm making my own version of it, kind of.
And it's kind of like a giallo movie, kind of like an
Italian. Very, very much like a giallo movie.
I liked it, though. This movie This movie aged real well.
I mean, other than the whole, like, transgender thing. But the thing about it is that I kind of feel like this movie does, and obviously this is going to have spoilers because, you know, it's kind of hard to talk about if you can't spoil what the big twist ending is. And honestly, like, seeing it nowadays, it'll be pretty obvious, I feel like, who the killer is. Because, I was watching another review of it, and the guy had never seen it and didn't know anything about it. And he's like, I knew who the killer was, like, in the first 5 or 10 minutes. Because they don't really make that much of a secret about it. So, you know, so I'm saying this is probably, like, easier to figure out nowadays.
Yeah.
But I feel like this movie does with, like, the same kind of thing that Silence of the Lambs did, where Jamie Gumm was, like, supposed to be, like, transgender or something like that, and they kind of made a big deal about that. I kind of feel like there's a weird thing, and this happened in giallo movies, too, but there's, not all of them, but it was, like, significant enough for me to notice, where it was always, like, the killer, they always had some kind of weird psychosexual thing, and it always had, and I guess it was more because people didn't really understand, like, you know, transgender, like, what it was and stuff, so it seemed weird or, like, exotic. So it was just like another thing to like shock the audience with, I guess.
It was real rare back then.
Well, I don't know if it was rare. It was just rare to like people for people to talk about it, I guess.
Yeah, there were definitely fewer of them, though. I mean, you know, there are photographs of them going back to the 20s, but I think there were fewer of them. Just because, shit, if you didn't live in a big city, you couldn't get away with that. They'd kill you.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I kind of feel like I don't think that it was necessarily rarer. It's just that there weren't the outlets, like, you know, you couldn't get. So in some ways, I feel like this movie coming out of 1980, even though I think it got some criticism at the time for implying that, and I don't think it necessarily implied this, but for implying that, like, transgender people were, like, weird lunatics or murderers or something like that. But the thing about it, too, is that it also seemed to have, I mean, there was a clip in there of Nancy Hunt, who was a pretty well-known, like, transgender, and she was on the Phil Donahue show, like, from the late 70s or something like that. So it seemed like they were trying to, and they kind of, like, explained, like, how stuff was done, which is kind of funny nowadays, because I feel like a lot of people know that. But it was really kind of, like, delving into a lot of issues that really didn't get into. And I think that he really, Brian De Palma, this is basically, like I said, it's his take on Psycho. And Psycho, Norman Bates was not transgender, but he dressed up like his mom. So you could say that was transvesticism, sort of, like a weird kind of transvesticism.
These old movies, I think they would equate, or they would draw parallels between, like, gender dysphoria and multiple personality.
That's what this one does, I feel like, more, yeah.
Yeah, and in the case, you know, in defense of Silence of the Lambs, Dr. Lecter said that James Gunn, that he wasn't a transsexual.
That he wasn't a real one, that he was just pretending.
Just thought he
was.
Yeah,
I was going to say that.
Yeah,
that
he was actually a serial killer. He was killing transgender people. He just thought he was a transgender. And this movie kind of says that, too. They were saying that he was more like multiple personality.
Yeah, this seemed more and like that, a multiple personality situation.
Yeah, and that he had a male personality and a female personality, and when the male personality would get fucking Randy, the female personality would emerge and try to stop what was happening and kill the woman. So it wasn't transsexualism. It was multiple personality. More anything else.
Yeah, more of a line. And like I said, so I feel like for 1980, I mean, this was, I don't know, you could say it was kind of ahead of its time for 1980. Like, it just, in the fact that it was so frank in talking about it.
Yeah.
And, but I don't know, like I said, Brian De Palma, this is basically Psycho, but 1980, and also, like, a giallo movie. And also, kind of, Brian De Palma, I feel like he always had a little bit camp, a little bit of a sense of humor, a little bit. I mean, he's a lot more, like, his stylistic stuff is, I think, what a lot of people really like about him, and it's great in this. I mean, some of the shots in this, he does his, you know, kind of his standard shots where, like, split screen, he's got a couple of those in here. Not that as many as some of his other movies, but he has that thing, and I wish I could remember the word for it. I heard the word for it, like, I heard somebody that was, like, a filmmaker say what it was called, but I can't remember what it is, where there's, like, something in the foreground, like, focused in the foreground, and then there'd be something focused in the background, but so, like, both things are in focus, but then it's kind of, like, fuzzy in the middle, and I can't remember, like, what the word for that is. There is a word for it, yeah. But he uses that a lot, and he uses that a lot in this as well, and it looks really cool. Like, I really like that style.
I actually kind of misspoke. He wasn't killing transsexuals in Silence of the Lambs, because that head in the jar wasn't a transsexual. That guy was looking for a transsexual and found James Gunn. That's how that shit went down.
Yeah, he was killing women because he wanted their skin.
He just killed straight women. He wanted their skin, and he killed that occasional guy who, you know, was looking for a transsexual. But the guy was. But Lecter said he was not transsexual.
Yeah, that he wasn't a real one.
That he just wanted to be one.
Right.
And that he wanted to be a woman, and he wanted to transform into something else, but he wasn't transsexual, he was a serial killer.
Yeah. And like you said, I think in Dress to Kill, they kind of equate being trans with having multiple personality, or having, like, a dual personality or split personality type of thing. But,
I mean? It was just that one, just my
opinion. I never really got the impression that they were saying that all people, and I think that's, like, the clip that they showed of Nancy Hunt, like, on the Phil Donahue show, which I guess, like, the doctor was watching it, does kind of, like, go a long way towards saying, yeah, we know people like that are just, like, regular people.
Yeah, that they had, yeah.
Like, we're not
that's
saying that they're, we're not
they're
saying that they're serial killers.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But, yeah.
But the way that one guy described it, he said it, the way he described it, he was actually describing multiple personality disorder, not...
Yeah, like he had two identities.
Two identities that were fighting for control.
Because apparently, I mean, like I said, spoiler alert, for a movie that's, you know, more than... How old is this movie now? More than 40 years old?
Yeah.
You know, spoiler alert for that. But yeah, Michael Caine is the killer. But the thing about it is, and like I said, if you see the beginning, if you're looking really close, you can probably tell, even though he's, you know, dressed like a woman. But... I kind of feel like, yeah, it had to be some kind of, like, real strict split personality because he apparently had a very successful, like, psychiatric practice. Yeah. And nobody really suspected that he was murdering people. Well, now, I don't know if he had just started murdering people.
He wasn't murdering people. The female personality
Bobby
was
the name of the, so of the female personality. I think it's more than that. Yeah,
it's split personality.
I mean, they do mention transgender on the show. And like I said, they do have a weird scene at the end where Nancy Allen is talking to Keith Gordon about... where their characters are talking about how they do sex changes and stuff like that. And this, like, old lady at this other table at the restaurant is looking on horrified, which I thought was kind of funny. But that's what I mean. There's kind of, like, funny scenes in this. But, yeah, so this is basically... It's set up almost exactly like Psycho, I feel like. Even down to... Because you know how in Psycho, very famously, you had, like, you know, Janet Leigh, and she was supposedly, like, the star of the movie, but then she gets killed, like... 40 minutes in or something like that. Same thing happens in this. They set up Angie Dickinson's character, Kate, at the beginning as the main character and spend a lot of time with her and shit like that. And then she gets offed 35 minutes in, and then it goes on to Nancy Allen's character. So that's almost the exact same thing that Psycho did. And there's even, like, shower scenes, and there's a scene at the very end, which I'm not entirely sure had to be there or not, but the scene at the very end, which is like a dream sequence, but it's almost like the end of Carrie, so that's almost like he's parodying himself a little bit. So there was that. But so what happens, you're following, like, Angie Dickinson plays Kate, and she's kind of middle-aged. I think she was 48 when she made this movie, and, at the very beginning, I mean, this movie, like, starts out...
She looks great, too.
That, well, the body double, yeah. That wasn't her.
That wasn't her? Okay.
No, it was, that was the,
All right, because I was going, boy, you know...
The penthouse playboy, okay. Whatever the fuck they called it. The penthouse pet of the year of 1977 or something.
Yeah, because I was going, well, 48, man, she's fucking looking great. 48.
Yeah, so that, that's, yeah, because the scene they show...
more like 18.
They show her, naked at the beginning. It's good how it's done, though, because in the long shots, it absolutely does look like Angie Dickinson's face, and I don't think they had the technology back then to, like, composite somebody else's head on somebody else's body, which you could do easily nowadays. But, yeah, I was gonna say, like, because there's a shower scene at the beginning. She's in the shower. Her husband is, like, standing at the bathroom shaving, and there's, like, a very long extended sequence... of, you know, close-ups of her rubbing soap over her nipples and, like, down in her pubes and
she
everything
was
like that.
Close attention, yeah.
I'm just saying, it's like, it's kind of hard not to. It's like right there up in your face. She's like watching her husband shaving, like, yeah, that's right. And it goes on for like a really, really long time. And then there's like a thing. I don't think this necessarily counts as a dream sequence at the beginning. It was more like a fantasy, like she was having a sexual fantasy. Because there's this weird thing where she's like watching her husband shaving and like kind of getting herself off in the shower, and then like somebody, like another dude, like appears in the shower and like grabs her from behind.
Yeah, she was having rape fantasies.
I think it was, it was kind of that. But then we see afterward, like, the reality where like her husband is just laying on top of her, like moving all awkward and like being all
he's like a lame fuck.
Yeah, yeah, stuff like that. So, and then she goes to Michael Caine's character, Dr. Elliot, who is her psychiatrist, and is basically talking about what a lousy lay her husband is, and she's really kind of, you know, frustrated and all this other kind of shit. And she even, like, comes on to him a little bit, like, low-key. And, which, you know, that's what gets her killed in the end because, you know, because she got, like, she got him aroused.
Yeah,
so.
But she goes down to the damn fucking art gallery to try to pick up dudes. She gets one, too. And they hook up.
A lot of people talk about, like, that sequence because it's such a good...
Yeah.
It's, like, it's 9 or 10 minutes of basically her and this dude, and they don't talk.
Yeah.
They're just... It's almost kind of like this weird, like, flirty, like...
She's trying to get this dude to fucking make
like
a move
cat
on her.
Mouse
he's
kind
not
of thing.
Really making a move. It takes him a while. He eventually fucking grabs it.
But they're, like, chasing each other through the museum and stuff, and she's just like, where's that dick? I'm trying to jump on it.
Yeah. She's trying to, like, not ask for it. which that's how women are. You know? So she jumps into the damn taxi, and he gets in there after, and then fucking he knocks her down in a taxi, and a cab driver's watching.
He's just like, whoa.
He's watching. Later, she turns up dead, and the fucking cab driver's like, yeah, I saw the whole thing. He's back there fucking cracking the hell out of her. Fucking, you know, they
left
were trying
the panties
to keep,
in the cab and everything.
She left her fucking wedding ring got lost. Wasn't that in the cab?
The wedding ring, actually, because they went back to the guy's apartment.
Yeah.
Remember? Like, because they fucked in the cab, and then he's like, well, now we're coming back to her house. And they never talk. They never talk to one another.
They make you think that was the killer.
They do, kind of. And, everybody kind of looked the same in the 70s with those smoked sunglasses.
Yeah,
and, like,
it turns out he just gave her what she wanted.
Yeah, but then, so the thing about it, she goes back to his apartment.
She was worried about getting gonorrhea, wasn't she?
Well, yeah, because she
didn't get that, though. She was just worried about it, though, did she?
Well, no, she got killed before.
But no, remember, she was looking at a piece of paper.
No, I was just going to tell you. Okay. I was just going to tell you. No. So she's at the apartment, and she banged the dude and stayed there. And then she's like, oh, shit, I got to go home. Yeah. And then she's looking for something, like looking for some paper or something to like leave him a note, and sees this big, long letter that from the doctor being like, hey, you have, I think it said that he had syphilis and gonorrhea. So
she had it?
No, that he had it. The guy she just slept with.
Oh, okay. How did she get that?
It was on, the doctors would send, if you have like a sexually transmitted disease, they will usually tell you, it's like, hey, you might want to tell all your sex partners that you have a sexually transmitted disease so they can get tested. So she was like looking for some paper in the drawer, and she saw the letter from the doctor that said, hey, the guy whose name was Warren or something like that, you know, you have, I think it was syphilis and gonorrhea. So he's been picking up ladies like at the Met for a long time, even though that wasn't, it's supposed to be the Met, but it was actually the Philadelphia Museum.
Yeah, that's part I didn't understand. How did he know where she was?
What are you talking about?
Oh, man.
How did he know who
was? I
watched
the damn movie, and Jenny's thinking that I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well,
the
The
dude that she screwed in the taxi cab.
Right.
How did he send her a letter? Saying that
he didn't send her a letter. The doctor sent him a letter, and it was in his drawer, in his desk, in his apartment.
Him who?
The dude that she slept with.
How did she find it?
She was looking. Remember, she was looking for paper so she could write a nice note, like, "Oh, you know, I'm going to leave my phone number."
That's right. That was his apartment.
Yeah. Okay. They went back to his apartment. I mean, she's married and has a teenage kid. They're not going to go back to her place.
I thought she just went back to her place.
No.
I don't remember. I didn't remember the part that she went. I thought they just did that in the taxi and that was it.
No, then they went to, because remember, she was in, that's how she ended up getting killed, because she was in his apartment building.
Okay.
That's where she was. She wasn't at home.
I thought she was at her own home.
No, because she has a husband and a kid. She's not going to go back to her house.
Yeah, they would.
Woman, I'm just
okay. Yeah, they will.
No, I'm just saying that that's not what happened in the movie, though. Okay. That's not what happened in the movie.
All right.
She went back to this guy's house, and she was like, "Oh, I'm gonna get the fuck out while he's still sleeping."
I got you.
And she was looking for paper for a note.
I got confused about where she was.
No, and then she looked for paper for a note, and then like she saw a letter that the doctor had sent to him at some point in the past.
Yeah, he was
saying
out.
That you had, and it's like, hey, you might want to inform like your sex partners. And she was like, "Oh shit."
Yeah.
And then she goes to the elevator, and then she realizes she left her wedding ring, and then she went back, and that's when she got killed. Like, she was in the elevator, and then the person came. And the reason that she got killed was, like I said, spoiler alert, because Michael Caine's the killer, but it's Michael Caine in drag. Michael Caine wanted to kill her because she turned him on, and he was, like I said, he would dissociate and go into his female persona when a woman like aroused his male persona, because he wanted to like cut that shit off, right?
That's right.
So she turned him on. So he had been following her.
Action.
Yeah, he had been following her. So when she got into the elevator, he like slashed her up. And then at that point, like, so she gets killed. And then at that point, Nancy Allen, who is a prostitute and has been visiting another client in the same building, she happened to be going down and she saw the murder. Like, she didn't see it actually take place, but she saw
the aftermath.
And she saw the killer, like, in the mirror.
She isn't just a prostitute. She's a fucking high-class fucking...
Yeah, she was, like, a high-class escort. And she had a lot of money. She had, like, a really
nice
apartment. And they had her talking on the phone about, like, buying stocks. And she was, like, investing in art and stuff like that. So
she was rich.
She was looking out for her future.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So she was, like, a very, very high-class, like, escort. But she's a great character in this. I really, really like her. So, yeah. So after Angie Dickinson, who you think is going to be, like, the main character, she gets killed. And then it goes to Nancy Allen, who saw the murder, and the cops also make her think, because she kind of stupidly, like, picks up the straight razor, you know, like, in the thing, and is just kind of like, hey, call the cops or whatever, so her fingerprints are all over it. And the cops actually, like, end up telling her, hey, well, you're a suspect for this because you were there and, like, your fingerprints were on the thing. They didn't really believe that, but you don't find that out until later. So she's basically like, you have 48 hours to kind of figure out, like, who really did this or help out in the investigation. Like, otherwise we're putting you in jail because you're a suspect. And also, Dennis Franz, like, playing the inspector or detective or whatever, he's great in this, too. And he's always just, like, yelling at her, like, for being a prostitute. He's, like, not really believing anything she says or anything. But like I said, as the movie goes on, you do actually find out the cops were taking her seriously, but they were just, like, busting her balls the whole time, which seemed a little shitty, but, you know. But, yeah, so after that, like, Nancy Allen's character, his name is Liz, actually, and she teams up with Angie Dickinson's character, whose name is Kate, her teenage son, who's played by Keith Gordon, who, if you didn't recognize him, played Arnie in Christine. I think he was in Legend of Billie Jean, too. I didn't realize this, but he became a director later on.
Yeah. He's good in this movie.
I always liked him a lot.
He was the dude that played Arnie in fucking Christine, right? And I'm watching him, and I was going, man, that would make a really good Paul Atreides back in the old Dune movie. I think he'd make a good Paul Atreides.
Yeah, I always liked him as an actor.
Yeah.
He was in a lot of stuff in the 80s. I think he was in Back to School with Rodney Dangerfield, too, now that I'm thinking
reason
about it.
Reason being is because if you ever read the books and everything, and then you find out what happens later to fucking Paul, Paul had a fucking sinister side to him. He ended up basically becoming fucking totalitarian, religious maniac, kind of. And he had a weird quality. Well, this guy has a weird quality to him. He kind of slightly sinister. He's like a sinister nerd. So he's always struck me that way, you know what I mean? He'd make a good Paul Atreides.
Well, I think that's what I liked so much about him in Christine, was that he was totally believable as, like, a real dorky outcast. And then, like, when he went all sinister, he was totally believable as being a sinister, menacing dude as well. Like, he had a really good range in that way.
Yeah, he could do both at the same time if he wanted to.
Yeah. Although in this one, he's nerdy, like he's like a science nerd and stuff, but he's a good guy. I mean, he's a really good guy. And he's like really upset about his mother dying, obviously. His stepdad doesn't really seem to give two shits about it. But he basically is like, starts using kind of his scientific knowledge to help Liz, the prostitute. They're going to figure out like who the killer is, like who killed his mom.
And he's in awe of her because she's just a fucking hot piece and fucking she's real intelligent. He's just like, wow. You know?
I like the rapport they have with one another. It's like, it's not super believable, but like I said, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that probably isn't super believable, but it's just kind of like a giallo movie. There's a lot of stuff that happens in there that's not super believable either, but it's just, you're watching it just because it's fun and stylish and, you know, you just, people get chopped up and there's all kind of like cool shots and shit like that. It's just fun. It's just a fun, like, erotic thriller slash giallo slash Hitchcock homage, I guess. But yeah, so Keith Gordon's there, like, he's got this great thing where he figures out, like, he goes to the dude's office because they figure out, okay, well, whoever the killer is one of Dr. Elliot's patients, because they kind of, like, try to throw you a red herring by showing Dr. Elliot, Michael Caine's character, getting a phone call from Bobby, basically admitting to the murder, saying, yeah, I put on, like, women's clothes, and I stole your straight razor, like, from your office, and killed that lady, it's gonna be in the paper, and blah, blah, blah. So they're trying to, like, throw you off like it's two different people. So you're thinking that that the killer is actually a patient of his, and he actually acts like that, too, because apparently he's completely dissociated from his female persona. So, like, when she's off doing stuff, he doesn't really seem to be aware of it. So, like I said, it's much more like a multiple personality thing than, you know, like a transgender thing, I would think. But, yeah, so
they borrowed that shit from, well, I didn't say they borrowed from Giallo, but Giallo borrowed it from other stuff. That was in all those movies at that time. Gender bending stuff.
There was, like, and I said, I mentioned earlier, a lot of Giallo movies have that as well. Well, and I don't even, like I said, I don't even think it was necessarily, it was just kind of like, one,
it was a way to reveal something.
Because it was shocking, and two, because it was like a twist that you didn't expect.
You weren't supposed to expect it. Oh, she was a boy the whole time, I didn't know, you know, that kind of shit.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like that's they were just basically doing it as kind of like, I don't know, kind of like a way to make it seem like Michael Caine wasn't the killer the whole time.
Right, yeah.
But like I said, because Michael Caine is not, let's not get a lie, not all that feminine looking. so even when they put him in a wig and a hat, yeah. even if you can't necessarily tell it's Michael Caine, you can tell that that's not a woman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I kind of feel like, especially, I don't know. So I feel like maybe back then, like people in bed, because everybody in the movie, in the context of the movie, is like, I saw a woman like in the elevator, and clearly the audience is supposed to think it's a woman, but it's obviously not.
It doesn't look like a woman.
It doesn't look like a woman. You know,
no.
so then you're just kind of like, well, that's obviously a dude. But I, like I said, like a lot
back
of lot of Giallo movies did that too.
Yeah, back in those days, maybe people would have been fooled because it wasn't as common to see a man dressed up as a woman. But you know, so maybe they, especially if you were younger. So maybe you know. But to me, I look at it and go, nah, it's a dude.
That's what I'm saying. So I feel like even if people see it nowadays, even if they don't recognize that that's Michael Caine,
yeah,
they'll be like, well,
that's a dude.
That's obviously a man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's not a woman.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's not like a big, huge shock. But that said, I don't know. I kind of feel like I said, this is very, very much like Psycho. And there's even a scene, you know, like, it has a shower. It actually has two shower scenes, because the one at the end, like, with Nancy Allen, because, she's naked in that, too. I thought it was just the lingerie, but I guess she's naked in the shower scene at the end, too. But, so they have that long extended shower scene, which is great, but it turns out to be a dream, which, okay. But, it's, like I said, the end of it was kind of gave me a little bit of a Carrie vibe. But, you know, there's that kind of, like, I don't know, that whole dream sequence at the end. I like it, but I don't know if it necessarily had to be there, because I kind of feel like it should have ended where Psycho ended, because they had pretty much the analogous scene as Psycho had, where you had the other psychiatrist, Dr. Levy, in there, like, explaining the pathology of Michael Caine's character, saying, oh, well, you know, he had this dual personality and blah, 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 and had this female side. And, you know, so any woman that aroused his male side was going to, like, bring out the female side and, like, had to kill it because she wanted to get a sex change and, like, she couldn't get permission and all this other kind of stuff. So, like I said, so that's almost kind of like what they did later on in Silence of the Lambs. But, yeah, so that was kind of like the same scene as Psycho, too, where they had the guy having to explain why Norman Bates, like, dressed up like his mom, like, to kill people. Because he was replacing her, essentially. So, it's similar.
Head gain.
Yeah, well, yeah, because it's a similar kind of thing. Well, yeah, because, I mean, the book, yeah. Psycho, you know, yeah. the Robert Bloch novel that the movie was based yeah. on, that's who inspired Norman Bates. Even though it's a lot different.
Yeah, Head Gain, you know, was doing the same kind of stuff, though. He was putting on women's skin, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, he's weird.
I don't know if you could have got away with that in 1960, but you know what I mean? I mean, there was some, like, splatter in the mid-60s, but I don't know. But, yeah, so, I don't know. Like, if you haven't seen, I feel like this is maybe one of, Brian De Palma made so many good movies, though, and I think we talked about that before. Like, we just talked about The Untouchables the other day, and
yeah.
we just talked about, like, a bunch of films that he did. Like I said, I know he's kind of, like, love it or hate it, because some people think that, you know, it's too over the top, or it's too, or it's style over substance, or it's all Hitchcock ripoffs, or something like that. And I think that's kind of, like, unfair. You could kind of say the same thing about Giallo movies, like I said, because a lot of those were real into Hitchcock and shit like that, too. So, and Dario Argento was, like, a massive, massive fan of Hitchcock, and a lot of his stuff was very Hitchcockian also. So I don't think Brian De Palma's doing anything that other filmmakers aren't doing.
No, they're all kind of doing that.
Right.
Yeah, it's me, De Palma's looking. He delivered on this one.
I really, really liked this movie. I had forgotten how good this was. It's just a great looking movie. It's just, I don't know, it's a lot of fun. Even though the mystery at the heart of it isn't all that mysterious, like, by today's standards, like, you could probably figure it out, like, pretty early. But that's, it doesn't matter, like, because you're just so engaged with the characters and, you know, and a lot of the scenes, like, there's that great scene in the museum, like, early on. There's that great scene, like, where Nancy Allen is, like, running through the subway. You know, the subway station and then the subway train, like, with the guys chasing her, and then the killer comes in the other side and, like, you know, fucking Keith Gordon, like, maces her or whatever. And there's all that. So there's all these really, really good, like, sequences in it. And just the way it's shot, he just has such a great visual style, too. Like, we talked about that a lot with Blowout, which was another one that we just talked about recently.
It's good storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, this just, like, a really fun, like, erotic thriller from the early 1980s. So, I mean, if you're into Brian De Palma at all, if you liked Carrie or if you liked any of that kind of stuff, then, I mean, this, I think this is definitely, like, a good one to watch. It's not, super, it's not like a giallo in the sense that it's like super, super violent with a high body count, but I mean, you know, Angie Dickinson gets chopped up pretty graphically in the beginning. Like, not graphic by today's standards, but by 1980 standards, it was pretty graphic. And then, but after that, it's more like a cat and mouse, like a chase kind of thing, because then the killer kind of targets Nancy Allen's character, Liz, because she, you know, saw him and is trying to figure out, like, who he is. So, and also she turned him on, too. So, you know, so the killer's chasing her as well. So it's more that kind of thing. Like, it's a more chase, like a murder mystery. Like, they're trying to, like, a whodunit, kind of. It's more like that kind of thing than a giallo. But I guess giallos are kind of like that, too. But, yeah, so this is definitely, if you like giallo movies, if you like Brian De Palma's other movies, and you haven't seen this one for whatever reason, then this is definitely, definitely a good one. I think it's probably one of my favorite De Palma movies. I haven't seen them all, admittedly, but I really, really like this one because you guys know I love giallo movies, and this is kind of like has that same kind of vibe to it. So I was gonna watch this on HBO Max or on Amazon Prime, and it said no, you needed like the Showtime add-on, and it was like $10. But at least if you're in the U.S., it's free on Tubi. At least as of this recording, because I was like, this better be free somewhere because I don't have a lot of money. So yeah, it's on Tubi, pretty sure. I think it might also be on Roku channel if you want to watch it on there. But yeah, really, really fun movie, Dressed to Kill from 1980. Please tell us what you thought about it in the comments, and that will do it for this movie retrospective. We will see you guys again on the next one. Bye.